Okay, fine. So for this year, we'll do something on Shemitah, which for those of you who were in Yeshiva, you know that at least my shir actually stuck with the whole year, and the other shirim stuck with it less, but did some of it. We did a lot. We did a lot. We did first parak, eighth parak, most of the ninth parak, a good percentage of the fourth parak, and then Kisugi of the sixth and tenth parak.
Yeah, and then we did like three
videos
in the last
week. You own the tenth parak, yeah. Yeah, we got rushed. So that's why I wanted to do this, because this is tenth parak stuff.
Okay.
I was thinking of you, Mordechai. So this is tenth parak stuff. So the tenth parak of Shemitah, and this is the part of Shemitah that's going to be relevant now, because most of Shemitah is over, but there's one halacha of Shemitah that is not yet relevant, and that is, Mordechai? Very good. Shemitah Ksafim, right? Shemitah Ksafim takes effect when? At the end. At the end of Shemitah. Okay? There is a sheet in the Rishonim who says that, this is mine, it's six pages, so these are all mine. Over there. sorry. There is a sheet in the Rishonim that a version of it takes effect at the beginning of Shemitah, and at the beginning of Shemitah, the loan is not wiped away, but you're not allowed to claim it, and that is the Shita of the Rush.
No.
Shita of the Rush. But fundamentally, the way we possibly make our Adin is that Shemitah Ksafim takes effect at the end of Shemitah, meaning Rosh Hashanah of year 8. So that is the halacha that we are going to focus on. But what I want to focus on is not, and this is why, even though there's a lot of makar, it's a little bit of a lighter shear. You're laughing at me, Chaim. Is the question as follows? Okay, so as important as the laws of Shemitah Ksafim are, the average person, how do they keep the halacha of Shemitah Ksafim? What do? They what? They write a puzzle, right? They write a puzzle and they circumvent it, right? They circumvent it, right? And that's great. That's really important. That if you have loans that extend that you want to collect, you should do it in the proper way. You should do it behead there by writing a puzzle. The problem is as follows. That's true. But as one of my Rebbeim put very nicely in an article, Moshe Lichtenstein has a very nice article on halachic loopholes. And he notes that every mitzvah you have to judge, not just halachically, but philosophically in two levels. And in English, there's a nice alliteration for it, right? There's the obligation and there's the opportunity, okay? A loophole fundamentally helps you in the level of obligation, right? Meaning, I'm not allowed to do something, I'm allowed to do something, whatever. I fulfill my technical obligation, right? But if you believe that a mitzvah is not just checking off a box that I kept the letter of the law, but actually God wants to accomplish something, you have lost the opportunity by taking advantage of the loophole. Okay? So, for example, if someone who wants to volunteer to be in monetary need right now, okay, go, Chaim. Okay, Chaim is in monetary need. Okay, so Chaim is in monetary need. So Chaim comes to me. We'll pretend for a moment it's not Shemitah. We'll get to Shemitah. We'll introduce Shemitah in a second, okay? So he asks me to borrow money, and I say, sure, Chaim, you can borrow money. Okay, now, the halacha is that if I lend him money, am I allowed to collect interest?
No,
I'm not allowed to collect interest, right? That's the Isur of Ribit, or Ribis, or whatever, right? Okay, Ribis, yes. Ribit, right? Neshech with Tarbit. You're not allowed to lend with interest. Okay, so just like with, as we'll see by Shemitah Ksafim, most loans, however, that extend in the halachic context nowadays, right, do they functionally collect something that looks like interest? Yes, they use something called a heteriska. Right? Heteriska, which redefines a loan as a mixture of a loan and an investment. Right? And therefore, you're not collecting interest, you're collecting dividends. Okay? Now, right, that's the loophole that we use, the heteriska. Okay? Now, if I write a really good heteriska, so my obligation, or in this case, the prohibition, I did not violate. Right? However, if Chaim really needs the money and I lend him money with interest, and let's say it's not a fortune of money, right? It's, I don't know, $100, $200, okay? So, and I take out a hetariska so that I can charge him payday loan rates, okay? I can charge him, you know, for a month, I can charge him $30 interest on a $200 loan, okay? So I think that's like the rates of payday loans, right? So I may not have violated the technical letter of the law because I have a hetariska. I didn't lend him money. I invested in Chaim, right? And I'm not getting interest. I'm getting dividends, right? But clearly, what? Okay, so this is... Chaim has it for his new business plan. I don't know what it is, right? What? Very businessy, yeah. So what Rav Moshe points out is that, look, maybe I checked off the box of the obligation, right? I didn't lend him money with interest. But if the point of the mitzvah, as the pasuk says, is if your friend needs money and he is poor, at least for these purposes, you should help him. Have I helped Chaim? No, I can afford to give him $200 and not take interest. I know, I'm so rich, right? Chinuch is great. Clearly. Right? But I've lost the opportunity to actually help Chaim. Right? So what do you do in a case like this? Right? So what do you do when you approach halacha like this, where there is a loophole in place? Right? Whether it be a heter iska or this, or selling chametz or whatever. What do? Right? How do you figure out, A, whether it is legitimate, not just halachically, but as we talked about a little bit on Tuesday, right? As the Rambam notes, there are levels that are beyond asur and mutar, right? There and mitzvah, right? There's things which are mishubach, there are things which are miguneh, there are things which are the right thing to do, things which are not. We have all types of phrases in halacha to categorize these, right? Things like lefnei mishur hadin, right? Whatever you want to call it, right? We have all types of meta halachic language that we use to describe how things are not the right thing just because they are technically mutter. So how do you figure out when it is not just mutter but spiritually correct, religiously correct, to take take advantage of the loopholes and not? What do you do in that situation? Okay, so that's the question I want to grapple with a little bit when it comes to Shemitah. But this, what I want you to keep in mind as we go through this, is that this type of question is the type of thing you have to ask every time you use a loophole, right? So I gave a share last week on daughters inheriting. Chaim was around for this when we did this in yeshiva. I went to Baba Basra. You were around for Baba Basra, right? Right? So halachically, when there are sons, daughters don't inherit. But the minhag for hundreds of years has been to create workarounds that allow daughters to inherit, right? So how do you deal with that, right? So I gave a shiur on that, and my parents came to the shiur on the way back. My father asked, okay, but why is that different? Because there I fully endorse, right? There I explained in the shiur why I fully endorse utilizing that loophole, right? Then my father said, okay, why is that different from selling chametz, where most years I try not to. Right, try not to sell chametz kavur. At this point, that's the easiest thing. Now that four of my kids are celiac, what in the heck in my house is chametz? There's nothing ever on any day of the year that is chametz. No, there is, but like not enough in like storage that matters. And we had our conversation, right? This is a big machloket, right? Where, you know, and I said, there's always two things you have to deal with, right? One is whether the sale works, right? The other is whether, even if it works, are you losing opportunity? And you know, there are all types of factors, right? Whether the sale is being done well, whether you have a lot in storage, so it's actually a hefsid, right? Or you're like me and you have, most of your family doesn't eat gluten, so there's barely anything in my house anyways. So like, right, who cares, right? How much money am I losing, right? Yeah. There is no simple answer, but sure, go ahead. I will throw out there that like, literally, dissertations have been written on variations of this question.
Right, but maybe we look at some
good. Remind me your name again?
Yosef.
Yosef. Right, so what Yosef says is a very good place to start, which is, okay, let's take Rav Moshe's model, okay? There's the obligation every mitzvah, and there's the opportunity in every mitzvah. Well, to figure out what the opportunity side. You got to know, well, what is the opportunity being afforded, which is another way of saying, I need to know why God commanded the mitzvah, right? So what they need to figure out is, okay, well, what is the rationale for the mitzvah? And therefore, is what I'm doing in line with the spirit of the mitzvah? So to give an example, going back to the Rivas case, right? Chaim David Levi has a tshuva as follows, which is very clever. And he says, you could always use a heteriska, but here's what he suggests. He says, okay, let's say the classic case of lending money without interest is the big guy lending to the small guy, right? The guy with more money lending to, right? But we have weird things in the modern economy which are the opposite, where the small guy lends to the big guy, right? Things like bonds. Let's take bonds, right? I lend money to the U.S. government, okay? Right? I take out an I bond, okay, which is linked to inflation and therefore currently stands at 9.62% or something insane like that, right? So I take out an I bond and I lend $10,000 to the American government, okay? So in such a case, you look at it, do you say, oh, the miskenim, the American government, I mean, how do I have the chutzpah to take interest from, right? Everyone understands that, like, that's not, right? There's no spirit of the law lost there. So Reb Chaim David Levi says, in a case like that, there's no reason spiritually not to take interest. There's a halacha, you can't take interest. Leave aside the fact the American government's not Jewish, I don't want to get into that. But, fine, Israeli bonds. Yeah, okay, Israeli bonds. Fine. Israel bonds, whatever they're called. Right? It doesn't matter. Right, but the same idea, right? So you would say, okay, in such a case, there's nothing wrong with it, right? Like spiritually wrong, right? Like I'm poor compared to the bank, to the government, whatever. But there is a halacha that I can't lend money with interest, right? So assuming that applies to corporations, and I don't want to get into all this halacha, just assuming that there's an isser, which is not clear, right? So in such a case, he says, it's spiritually legitimate to write a hetereska because this is not in line with, right? The isser here exists, but it's not, right? This is not the classic case in which I'm protecting the person by lending the money without interest. If, on the other hand, Chaim comes to me and he needs $100, $200, right? In such a case, right, he needs the money, right? That's what the mitzvah was made for me to help someone who needs money. In such a case, for me to then say, and I'm going to, you know, take a payday loan, right? I'm going to make it a payday loan with very high interest. And, you know, and if, Nagib, this actually was a court case, right? Let's say I live in a state that has anti-usury laws, right? There was anti-usury laws, right? Laws that you're not allowed to charge unfair amounts of interest, right? There are states like this. There was a court case in America where someone charged usurious amounts of interest, but claimed that it was mutter because they had used a heteriska and therefore it wasn't interest, right? Right? If I do that, I'm that's, right, that's the most jerk thing you could possibly do, right? Like, I am going to, like, be less, right? So Chaim David Levi says, in that case, look at the philosophy of the mitzvah. The philosophy of the mitzvah is take care of the poor, right? Or at least the people who need the money, right? You need the money more than the bank, than the government, whatever. They just happen to issue, right? So in such a case, use the heteriska because you still have to check the box of the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law, right? There's nothing wrong with doing that.
I don't see why it's unjust to charge against the corporation.
Okay, good. So now Ezra says, oh, there's a problem. Why? Because maybe in theory the right way of doing this is to look at the philosophy of the mitzvah, but maybe I got the philosophy wrong. Right? Maybe the philosophy has nothing to do with taking care of the poor. Maybe it has to be that that you, I don't know, come up with it. You should have trust in Hashem. You shouldn't make money off time, right? Which is what interest is, right? You're being paid for time, right? Without doing any effort. Whatever philosophy you want to come up with, right? It's a lack of brotherhood, right? And is as one post like wrote, there was a argument a bunch of years ago about this, where between Yaakov Ariel or Dani Wolf and Yael Benun on this point, right? And one svara that was suggested last year was, well, they're corporations, and corporations are not achicha, right? They're not your brother. And since the pasuk is, right, don't lend money la'achicha, they're not your brother. And the response article was, the title was, habank achicha, right, achicha ata, right, the bank, you are my brother, right? So you could just say, it's very nice. Maybe in theory you should go to the philosophy, but the danger, as Ezra correctly notes, is, but maybe you got it wrong, right? Whenever you play this game, maybe you got it wrong, right? Yeah. Good. So sometimes you have to say, well, maybe in certain cases it's going to be clear because for whatever reason, right, this was the argument that I used last week when I talked about inheritance of daughters, right, where there I said, listen, the fact that for 500 years, both in Ashkenaz and Sfarad, there have been different mechanisms put forth to allow daughters to practically inherit shows that all the Bali Mesorah for 500 years thought this wasn't against the spirit of the law, this is what you should do, right? No, I know, but I'm saying, so I said, in that case, I trust the Mesorah in the sense that the fact that all poskim for the last 500 years have made this a reality shows that the way they understand the halacha is that this is in line with the Torah, right? So you could do this here, and you could say, well, if a clear Mesorah would emerge as to the spirit of the law, then that would make it easier. But if, let's say, there's a machloket, right, so that would make it much more complicated. Remind me again your name. Not Yossi's brother, yeah? David, okay.
In terms of...
I could have just cheated and just said Luth, but, you know.
In terms of comments on the whole reason that this original has been a Chirah, it was coming from a rap, from a battle, was because Jews that were, like, in the business of, like,
Right, so that came up in the, right, so Mechir's comment came up with Hefsid, and Hefsid is one of those weird things that comes up in the context where, on the one hand, it's not ideal, but on the other hand, it might be necessary, and Hefsid is one of the big factors that is often invoked. Hey, look, if you want more on this, like I said, there are literal dissertations written on this, there is. Ilana Steinhain wrote her dissertation on loopholes in the Bavli, Rishonli, and Tosefta. It's excellent. I suggest you read it. And as anyone who knows me knows, I mean that. I have read it, right? I enjoy it, and I have given shear, right, in integrating the conclusions of it.
On the other hand, the hazard to use of first of all, most of the is made.
Be careful there. Okay. Those may or may not be the same thing. It's Machal Gari Sharnan, but okay.
What was made for the very fact that what happened was that people stopped doing the books, giving them the law. This can be made the same argument by interest. If a Jew is not going to give the woman at all, then it's better to rely on Hefter Isra than to not have this guy, you know, in the story of the book, rather give that to his wife.
Yeah, that's funny. So that was actually arguments that were proposed by the free loan societies, was that no one will give loans, right? There was an opposition to the creation of free loan societies on that basis. It's discussed, I think, if I remember correctly, in Sarna's History of the Jews of America, of the original, there was an opposition to the original Hebrew free loan societies because of that point, right, was that people won't end up lending and that will be worse, right? So yeah, you could do that, right? And then you would, okay, right? So like I said, even though there's a lot of Makarot here, what I really wanted to do was have this discussion, right, which is how do you do this, right? How do you have this discussion and figure out what to do? Yeah, sir.
I think Shemitah could be unique from other cases, which is, if I'm correct, today Shemitah is a Derban, and like collecting the loan, specifically, I think it's a Derban as a Zecher for when it was Daraisa. So because of that, if we use the principle, we get the same Zecher, don't we?
Okay, so, I thought you were going somewhere else. Okay. I'll divide what you said into two. Okay, first point is, this might be different because it's Derabanan. Rav Schechter makes that point in Eretz HaTzvi, is that the question of when you can use loopholes is very different Daraisa and Derabanan. It might always be legitimate by Derabanan, where it isn't by Daraisa, even though I've heard from Rav Rimon the opposite. Rav Rimon suggests that, no, it's better to use loopholes by Daraisa than Derabanan. Why? So he says, very simply, because rabbis are not omniscient, and therefore, they may not have foreseen the way you were going to come up with a loophole, so you're actually undermining them. But you can never, because God is omniscient, right, if there is a loophole that can be made, God foresaw it. And therefore, you can't in the same way say you're undermining. I'm not sure I'm convinced, right? But I tend to agree with the Rejector more. What? I didn't say I was. But I've heard the opposite. Your second point is, well, maybe the point of having Shemitah nowadays is just a Zecher, and just a Zecher as a proposable is enough. Okay, interesting. Okay, let's try to pin this down. And like I said, There's two types of source sheets in life. Right? This was an insight I heard many years ago from Roy Brander. One is the type where you plan to cover it in sheer, and the other is where you hope to interest people enough that they have reading material if they want to follow up. This is clearly that. I'm not going to read six pages in 22 minutes or whatever I have left. I'm just not going to do that. Okay. But like I said, basically nowadays what we're left with is that most people, the way they keep Shemitah Kesafim, for better or for worse, is writing a prosbul and collecting the loan, right? So that has left it that practically people don't do anything except write that document. Is that a problem? So what I gave you in one, I will read it inside. Basically, there has been for the last number of years, and this was from 7 years ago, attempts to say, okay, let's try to make it relevant. Let's make it relevant practically. So there was a suggestion proposed in Knesset to come up with a debt forgiveness program for a certain number of poorer people in Israel, right, in the spirit of Shemitah, and to waive their loans, right, a government loan, a debt forgiveness program, okay? And again, what that law was doing was basically people saying, listen, the Shemitah here has a very important lesson to teach us, right, and we should come up with some way of implementing this law, even if we're not actually going to do. So we've talked about some of the problems or some of the ways of approaching this. What I want to do is try to concretize this. Okay, so let's now look at the Pesukim. And number two, the Pesukim tell you, Mikein Sheva Shanim Tazeh Shemitah. So every seventh, the end of 7 years, you do Shemitah. V'zed bar Shemitah, Shamot, Kol Baal Masha Yadav, Asher Yeshev Re'elu, Yigoz Et Re'eyu, V'rachiv, Ki Kara Shemitah L'Adonai, Et Anachrit Yigoz, V'asher Yelecha Rachicha, Tashmit Yadecha, Efes, Ki Lo Yeh V'cha Avyon, Ki V'arechi, V'arachicha Adonai, Ba'aret Asher Adonai Lechot, Nozim Lecha Nach Allah L'Yishtah. Rak im shamot yishma b'kol adonai lech lishmor la'asot et kol mitzvah azor asher anochi mitzavcha yom gedonai lech b'erach echa kasher diber lach v'avata goyim rabim v'ata lo ta'avot u'mashalta b'goyim rabim u'vecha lo yimsholu. Right, so every 7 years you have Shemitah. Why? Because there will always be poor people. So you can claim from the non-Jew, but not from your brother. From your brother you shall relinquish the loan and you shall not claim the loan. Listen to God. Okay? And then in Pasuk Zion, you get the second half of it is Ki Yevecha Avyon Me'achad Achecha B'Achad Sharecha B'Artzecha Asher Adonai Elecha Notein Lach Lo Ta'ameitz Lelavcha V'Lo Tikvot Et Yevecha Me'Achicha Avyon. When you have a poor person, you have someone who's destitute in your land, don't close your heart to him. Don't close your hands. Ki Patoch Tiftach Et Yevecha Lo V'Aveit Avitenu Deimach Terosh Yechtar Lo. Lend him money. Lend him what he needs. Yishamer lecha pen yeh davarim levavcha b'liyal lemor karva shenat ha-sheva shenat ha-shmita v'ra'a incha be'achicha avyon v'lo titein lo v'kara alecha l'adonai v'ayavacha achet. And don't say in your heart, oh, Shemitah's coming, I can't lend money because God will not be happy with you. No, naton titein lo v'lo yira levavcha b'titcha lo ki b'glal ha-davar hazeh yivarechecha adonai alecha b'chol ma'asecha v'chol mishlach. Because of this, God will bless you. Because there will always be poor people, and that's why I command you, open your hands to your brother, to the poor, to the destitute in your land. Those are the psukim. Okay. Two questions for you. One. Okay. I know we're not supposed to rate mitzvot, right? But if you just read this language, right? Is this the type of mitzvah that you would want to rely on a technicality to get out of? Right? I would say no. Besides the fact that it repeats itself like 20 times, and God says, for this you're going to bless, it also hammers in the need for it. There's always poor people. It says that like six times, right? They're going to need it. And for this purpose, God will bless you. And it says over and over, open your hands, and even more so, as we mentioned before, God goes out of his way, which he doesn't in most mitzvot, to say, I know it's hard, but do it anyways, right? Once God himself is saying, this is hard, but do it anyways, you might want to think twice before you say, yes, let's embrace the loophole, because God didn't just tell you do it. He said, do it, and I know it's hard, do it, right? But it's not like God said that with chametz. Get rid of your chametz. I know it's hard, but get rid of it. Because I think most people, if you read that, you would feel a little bit weird about like selling your chametz, right? If you might. Just like if God said, get rid of it, I know it's hard to get rid of it, get rid of it, right? You might at least think twice. But here we actually have that language, which is, do it. I know it's hard. Do it. No, really do it. Just do it, right? So first thing is, if I had to guess, I would say this is not the one I want to avoid. Second is, what, as we mentioned before, what we're going to need to do is to figure out, okay, well, if we're not going to avoid it, so what are we going to do? We have to figure out, well, what is the value of the mitzvah? What values do you get from these psukim? So one is definitely help the poor, very good. Camaraderie, right? Achicha, you get that key word. Yeah, yeah.
Well, in general, to this situation specifically, where you're not getting your money back,
good, right? So as several Rishonim say, is to learn the midah of vatranut, the ability to give up, right? To not cling to your possessions that way. Good, yeah. Yes, which may be connected to that. All the overarching philosophy of Shemitah, remember that God is God and control and right, all that stuff. Yes, and taking care of the poor and making sure they eat and equality and all those things that come up. Yep, for sure. Okay, so with that in mind, so now let's, oh yeah.
It happens to imply that it should be, because of the fellow Jews, that a lot of people are most attached to it, that there should be no court that itself, so is it no haggis everywhere or in itself?
Good, everywhere, but that is a discussion in Chazal, how we know that, right? Because yes, it says Arsecha, but... But lehalacha shmita ksafim applies everywhere. Okay. In number three, I just gave you the Rambam summary, right, of the halacha we're dealing with, right, which is mitzvah aseh lashmita malva mishvi'it shne'emar shemot kol ba'al matzah yada, right? It's a positive mitzvah to waive the loan. Okay, halacha bet. Ein shmita ksafim noge menatar al bizman shevel noge. This is Ezra's point. Nowadays, according to the Rambam, according to Rov Rishonim, Shmita does not apply at a biblical level, right? This is Rov Rishonim. It's either Derabanan or less than Derabanan, right? The Ravid assumes that it's a minhag. Shmita. At all. Correct. Including Shmita Ksafim, right? The Rush says when he moved to Spain, he was shocked to find people who just lent money and collected it after Shmita without a prose bowl, and concluded that they must have held that Shmita just didn't apply at any level, not Derabanan, not minhag, not nothing. What? The Rush. The Rush, when he moved to Spain from Ashkenaz, right, so he moves from Germany to Spain, right, so he was shocked, right, and he defended it on this basis that, well, it might not apply at all. But it's not biblical. So in Alach HaGimel, the Rambam tells you, Midirei Sofrim, Shetehei Shmita Ksavim Noheged Bezman Hazeh B'chol Makom, Midir Rabbanan applies everywhere, Midir Rabbanan, even though the Yovel is not Noheg. Halach HaDali tells you that Ein Shmita Mishamet Ksavim El B'Sofa, as we talked about, that it takes place at the end. And then he tells you the history, right? This is summarizing the sugya in the 10th parak of Shvir in the parallel sugya in Gittin. The kishara hilela zaken shenu mil alvot zedzeh v'over nakatuv batara yishamer lacha pen yedavar. When Hillel realized that people were violating, so he kin pruzbul kadesh lo yishamer achov. He came up with pruzbul, so the loan wouldn't be wiped away. In the Rambam's position, which is not Muskam Rishon, it's Machok in the Gemara, how you paskin, Rava or Abaye, but the Rambam paskins that this only works when Shmita is Derabanan. That's not the only Shita in the Gemara. But that is the position of the Rambam. Halacha Chavchet, this is just quoting a direct Mishnah, they call a master Chov She'avar Elav Shviat Ruach Chacham Ne'echaymenu, right? Let's complicate the picture. The Mishnah says, what if someone wants to pay back the loan? So then, what's the halacha? Then Chazal say, we're happy with you if you return the loan. And the way it works is, the lender has to say, I forgive the loan. I have no claims on you. He says, nevertheless, I want you to accept it. You can take it as a gift. Right? He goes, Varelo Nagas. Right, because he didn't claim it. And don't say, I'm giving it to you as a debt. Say it is a gift. Okay, now this complicates the picture a little bit. Why? It's not just a loophole. It's that this one, Chazal seems to say, is endorsed, right? It's not just, right, it's endorsed. We want you to pay back the loan, right? We want the money to get back, but as a matana, which complicates the picture because it sounds like we don't want loans to be collected, but we do want you to get your money back, right? So, which complicates the picture, well, what exactly is the value? Because if Chaim borrows my money, but then gives it back to me as a matana, shockingly, he still doesn't have the money in his hands. What? It's in a Hanami, it's up to him. Correct. Right. Right. And that, correct. Right. Now, there are some people who like, have the minhag of like being mashman a few shekel or something like that. I remember when I first moved to Toronto 7 years ago, it was like the end of Shemitah, and right, Turchiner, one day, he's like in the car, he was driving me back, he's like, I want to lend you like $5, right, so that I can be mekayem the mitzvah. I was like 2 weeks before Shemitah, right? This is a minhag goes back, you know, to be mekayem it symbolically, right, to actually be mashamed a few dollars, right? I have my loan already in my head that I'm going to do that too. You know, I have it, you know. What a few years. It's in a few weeks. Yeah, it's the end. Yeah. I was when I was at Usher's funeral on the way out, Bernie didn't have money on him and needed a water bottle from the machine. And I'm like, aha, this is a perfect loan. I will lend you the 6 shekel. I'm like, okay, I'm going to tell him before Shemitah, I'm Mishamit, the, whatever it was, 6 shekel. What? I'm sure he can pay me back the 6 shekel. I was like, no, he could pay me, and that's why it's a real loan, and yet I'm going to Mishamit. Yes, I think most people could pay me back the 6 shekel. Okay, so what do we do? Yeah, Adam.
You're going around with mitzvah to abolish the loan, and because it wasn't a loan, it was actually a gift. So,
no, well, it was originally a loan, and now I waived the loan, and now he's giving me back the money as a gift.
Oh, I thought you were saying you were initially giving me a gift.
No. It's like I give money to Chaim. In Shir, usually I would just actually give people money, but you're too far because we're all at one table, so I could just hand Mordechai money. You know, would you like money? And we should act it out. Is that what you want? I can. I actually have money in my wallet, you know, amazingly. Say again?
So the thing is that the goal isn't that you should actually lose money. The goal is just that you should force it so that you know the source of the spirit.
Oh, good. Right? So this complicates it because it makes it seem like maybe the point isn't just to help the poor. It's to not claim money from the poor, which is a much more complicated formulation. You've got to figure out why would I not claim it? And this might come back to, well, even if I don't claim it, I at least have acknowledged that I'm not in control, right? The fact that I get my money back, it's different, right? So that points to the fact that this might be a little bit of a different mitzvah, right? Maybe it's about restoring dignity, right? Because in the end of the day, if Chaim, even though he should give it back to me, if he can choose to give it back to me, I can't force him, right? I may not have given him money, but I've given dignity, right? Meaning he now gets to give money to the big gvir, right? You know, like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, what? Very fancy, yeah. Yeah. Because there's a mitzvah to be mishamei kesefim, right? There's a mitzvah for me, as the lender, to say, I waive it. Okay. To complicate the picture just a little bit more, right? As Ezra had pointed out before, one of the things that's complicated is if you get it wrong, right? So, one problem is you get it wrong, but there's an even bigger problem. If you get it wrong, so you'll say, okay, maybe I got it wrong, but what's there to lose? When does this get worse? If there's a counter value, right? If you're wrong about the value that drives the mitzvah and you miss a counter value, then using, right, then failing to use the loophole, right, could be problematic. What counter value might there be here, right? Why might you want to take advantage of the loophole? So one is just practically people might not give loans. The other is, as we saw, why is it that Chaim is encouraged to give me back the money? Right? Where does that come from? Why? So you look at, for example, number 5, three words in the Gemara. Well, whatever, words. Priyat Balchov Mitzvah. There is a mitzvah in the Torah to pay back loans. That is a mitzvah on the borrower. right? So there is at least another counter value that is floating around. In fact, it's a very unique mitzvah. It's a very unique mitzvah. What? Right, you're right, right? This gets complicated, right? I'm not really doing time because I'm not, right? But this is where, right, you see there's a counter value working, right? It's a very interesting type of mitzvah to begin with, right? Reb Chaim notes this, right? Where, this is a very brisker question, right? But he says, wait, Priyat Rachov is mitzvah, and the halacha is that mitzvah that say, you only have to spend a fifth of your money to be a kind of mitzvah that say. So what if I borrow more than a fifth of my, right, net worth? Does that mean I don't have to pay it back? Obviously not. It's a unique type of mitzvah, which is defined by giving back the money you actually paid, right? It's a very unique type of mitzvah. Well, that's exactly the point, is that this is, right? Okay.
Well, then that shows you the idea behind the mitzvah.
Good. So now we have...
It is for the people that weren't able to pay back loans for Shemitah. Since we're already charged to pay back loans for Shemitah, therefore, if there was somebody that wasn't able to pay back loans for Shemitah, that shows you the entire idea that it was for forgiveness of loans for people that weren't able to do that.
Okay, so now let me throw it out here. Yeah.
$5
Okay. I don't think we do that. I think he just let me keep the $5. I think it was $5. I don't know. Maybe it was something else. And it's $5 Canadian, so you know. Whatever. Like $3 or something. What? Yeah, I know. The first time I went there, you call these what? Loonies and toonies? Really? That's what you call your currency? New Bemet. Bemet. What? $1 is a loony and $2 is a toonie. Yeah. No, that's not a joke. Sadly, that is not a joke. Their money looks... I lived there for 3 years. I couldn't get over it. Their money looks fake. It's like crazy. Like... This is, I mean, look at it. It's colorful. I mean, look at it. It's like colorful plastic. What? No, this is a 10, but it's like, yeah. You know, look at this. I mean, look at it. It's like, it looks like plain, it looks like Monopoly money. Anyways, yeah. Anyways, okay, so what would you do? So what would you do? Okay, now I throw it to you. What would you do, right? You are now tasked with a reality in which we have, let's see if I have a linear tune here. I don't have one. So you are now tasked with coming up with some policy that isn't just going to keep the law, but it's going to somehow be the best representation of what the Torah wants. Okay? What would you do? What is your goal? What do you do? And justify it. Defend it. And what I want you to do as we go through this thought experiment is think about how this is a model for everything. Okay. Give me different models. You don't have to stand behind them, but you can play devil's advocate, so give me a model. You can stand behind it if you want. You don't have to. Okay, good. Right, so the first is to say, listen, and I'll elaborate, which is, listen, I know it's hard, but if we assume, which you said before, so for the moment I'll put this in your mouth, that the purpose of Shemitah Kesafim is to help the poor. So if you can't afford it, so you're already in a bedieved situation, fine, so use the protocol. But if you can afford it, and the person that borrowed the money is poor, right? So one derech is to say, as much as possible, with, you know, exceptions when necessary, you should keep the mitzvah. So this, for example, if you look at 8, was Rav Yoel Ben-Nun. Rav Yoel Ben-Nun, and you can read it inside, but basically it makes a few points, right? One is, Ein chova limsor lebeit din al yedei shtar prusbol et kol ha-chovot. There is no obligation to protect all your loans with a prusbol. That's, no one said you have to, right? And then the second point, if you just see Rekha Chevrati Kalkali, is there is, the reality in Israel is there is a wide, there is a wide gap between the richer parts of society and the poorer parts of society, and therefore it often happens that there are people who really need the money and people who really don't need the money. And so one potential way is basically to say, at least whenever possible, you should keep the mitzvah pshuto kimashma'o, right? When possible. right? So that's one model to say, listen, but what assumptions go into that? Which is, I know what the purpose of the mitzvah is, which is helping the poor, right? I understand why there's a loophole, but you don't have to use a loophole. So whatever the you can afford to fulfill the mitzvah without using a loophole, you should do it, right? That's one model, right? Which is just to say, use it when necessary, but don't when not. Good. What other model? So Ezra, I will allow Ezra to come in, because going back to, I want you to build a model based on what you said before.
I have a question.
Okay. But then you can then build a model based on what you said before.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think in Yosef's model, you have to admit that you can't require anybody.
Correct. You wouldn't require it. I mean, this isn't requiring. This is what is the spiritually right thing. And you would say, people who can afford it should do it. Right? You, I can't force you. But the right thing to do, if I'm asked what's the right thing to do, right? That's the right thing to do. Right, again, I can't tell anybody that you can't write a heter iska to lend money with interest, but if your neighbor, right, when I have made loans, even big loans, right, to family members who needed it for whatever reason, right, I didn't charge interest because if I can afford it, that's wrong, right? It's not usher for me to do it, but I, right, you know, like, I don't write a heter iska when I lend someone 5 shekel for a, you know, to get a can of Coke, right? Like, that's absurd. I could, right? But I'm not going to. I just, what? I don't know. I never drink soda. It's ridiculous, but I don't know. I don't know. I came up with a theoretical case. I don't know. How much is a can of Coke? I don't know. It's disgusting. This is my deal. Okay. So that's one model. Ezra, I want you to build a model based on what you said before.
About
the Jehovah? No, the other, second half. Yeah. Is?
Well, that considering that I think it's very hard to know what the philosophy is. So based off of that, I think it has a similar outcome as you said. Based off of that, then you should always make sure to do it as much as possible because you don't really know what the philosophy is.
Oh, so now you're being defensive. But I thought you were going to go much stronger. So if you look at number, the next one here, this was a response by a guy named Steve Epstein, right, to Rav Yoel's point. He said, well, ma pitom. In order to figure out whether you're getting it right, that you're accomplishing the spirit of the law, you need to know that you got the spirit of the law right. What are you assuming by saying, yeah, if you can help the poor, help them, then what's the point of the mitzvah?
Help the poor.
Help the poor. What if you're wrong? What might be the purpose of the mitzvah?
Millions.
Good. So what, now the problem is, there's good evidence that it's about helping the poor, and that is?
The public.
The public, very good. So he points out this, because Kuni and David G. Hoffman say, yeah, but it's a very specific type of poor. It's not all poor. Which poor is it? The people who are poor because they're keeping the mitzvah of Shemitah. Right? It's the poor farmers. That those who are not farmers, right, we talked about this on the Shemitah tour, but those who are not farmers, right, their artisans are not suffering during Shemitah. Their neighbors, because they're keeping Shemitah, are suffering. So the Torah says, as Rav Meidan has it, the Torah is giving the artisans a way of participating in the Mitzvah Shemitah, and that is, look at these farmers who have such bitachon in Hashem that they are, right, not working for a year, now they're poor. So the Chizkuni says the Mitzvah isn't to protect the random poor. It's to protect the farmers who are poor because they kept the mitzvah of Shemitah. That's the purpose. If that's the reason, then should you, is there even the spirit of the law to protect a random poor person who's just poor for some other reason?
You know that's the reason, then, no.
Right. But that's exactly the problem, right? Is that in order to firmly say you should do X, you need to know why the mitzvah, the rationale for the mitzvah, right? But you could just say you can't do it because you misunderstood the point. Or you go with any of the other reasons of Shemitah. It's about trusting in God, whatever, right? If you do, so this is, right, two sides of the same coin. Both of these positions basically say that if I can implement the spirit of the law and I can afford to do it, I should. But the difference is, can you be confident that you got the rationale right such that you're going to manifest it correctly? Now, in this particular case, I'm not sure that's a great response because at the end of the day, you're doing what the Torah said. It's not like I'm coming up with something new. I'm just actually fulfilling the mitzvah. So maybe I got it wrong, but, you know. Right. But you could then push back and say, okay, but why? So why then wouldn't you just say, okay, but I can still afford it. So who knows what the reason is, but I can afford to do it. Well, this gets more complicated if there's a cost. What cost might there be? So one is that we value Priyat Baal Chov, even if it's not technically Priyat Baal Chov, but we do value paying people back, right? But okay, I'm allowed to waive that. The bigger problem is that the whole point of the principle was to encourage people to lend money. Now, you may be a tzaddik, but maybe you're not. Right? And maybe you don't even realize you're not a tzaddik. Maybe you will be afraid to lend money because, right, you don't even realize about yourself that you're not going to lend as much money as you could have if you don't write a principle. Right? And if Hillel set up the principle to protect the poor, because what's worse, right, making them pay back the loans or them not getting the loans at all, maybe in the back of your mind you'll say, sure, I'll waive it, but that's if someone borrows $100, but if someone borrows $20,000, right, you would give the loan if you expected to get it back, but you wouldn't, right? So there is a cost to utopian thinking, because maybe you don't understand yourself and you're going to end up not lending money. Right? And that would be a reason not just to not endorse it, but to actually actively say, no, 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 this loophole is in place for a reason. Right?
And then MR wanted to say,
what?
Require
what?
Using
a we don't require using a principle, but there are discussions of oh yes, whether we should actively endorse it. Yeah, meaning both intrinsic self and intrinsic karka, we have discussions like this. So what other models might you have? What other models might you have? Right, so we might just say, look, use it because whatever, right? Right, and just say, look, the loophole is there for a reason. Use it. Good. Now, what else might you do? What is in between this? Right. So now we've said, assume firmly that you know what the rationale of the mitzvah is, and keep the law pshuto k'mashmo as much as you can. And the opposite extreme is, right, assume that you don't know what it is, and there are counter costs, so just use the loopholes. Right. What else might there be? Right. Obviously, you can take this to the extreme. Never use the loophole. Right. Or always use it. Right. Fine. But what else might there be? Okay, right, again, but these are all within the same model, right? You could say take it on a case-by-case basis, right? But we're still, right, but there are other possibilities. Like what? Think creatively. Don't just say, do it, don't do it. What else might there be? You're still doing that to me. Right, come on. Right, you're still saying, depends.
Do it part
of the law. Okay. Good. So one way is to say, right, not just depend on the situation, but actively, right, do it in certain cases and don't do it in others, right? Like that is actually endorsed, right? Take some, leave some, right? Like actively do it that way. I'll throw out other possibilities. Remember, what did we start with? The Shemitah law. Does the Shemitah law have anything to do with this, right? It's the government mandating, right, every, right? Another possibility is to say, listen, the mitzvah, for whatever reason, we can't keep nowadays. But there are important lessons in the mitzvah, and maybe what we have to do is come up with some sort of, I don't know, you call it a takana, call it something else, that will channel those laws, the spirit of the law, in a different way. So if you look at 6, if you want to look at it inside later, you'll see that that's what Rav Shurlow suggests. Right? Rav Shurlow says, listen, maybe it's too hard to actually implement Shemitah Ksafim, but what we should do is go through all the different rationales that Shemitah has and find ways, right? So if part of the reason is to protect the poor, so come up with debt forgiveness. If part of it is to teach yourself, come up with something that will do that, right? So another option is to say, maybe this whole discussion has gotten too technical. If what we're trying to do is to channel the spirit of the law, maybe the right thing is to come up with something new, right? To recognize that principle is on the ground, right? But come up with something new. Now, some people will look at it and say, wait, we don't do new things, right? Because that gets very tricky. But I want to show you that's a model, right? That's a model, right? Sometimes we do, right? Sometimes we do, right? Sometimes we do have that kind of, we do have Ormin Hagim that arise to channel a certain element of a law, right? In new ways, right? Right, we do have that. Right, think about all the things we have as we're going to the right Rosh Chodesh now. Right, but remembering the Beit HaMikdash is valuable. But how we manifest it, right? There was nothing before that, right? right? Before the takanot, we made zeichel hamikdash. We made them to channel that spirit in new ways. We do that, right? So again, I gave this to you. I see that it's time for Marev, basically in 2 minutes. So, but I gave you these different models just to show you that, look, in general, this is the question you have to ask. Because whenever you have a law where there is an ingrained loophole, right, whether it be Shemitah Ksafim with Prozbo, whether it be Heter Iska with lending with Rivas, whether it be Mechiras Chametz, right, there are a few steps you need to go through to figure out, again, not just whether what you're doing is mutter, but whether it's the right thing, right? One is, you got to figure out what's the spirit of the law, right? If you're confident, so maybe the right thing is to implement it, right? If you're not confident, or you think that there's going to be countervalues, right, so maybe the right thing is to do is to keep going with the accepted practice and don't shake things up. Maybe the answer is to go case by case. Can you handle it, right? Is this the right person, right? Things like that, which is to try to sort of, right, recognize the complexity. And sometimes the answer is, listen, it's so ingrained, but there's still important lessons here. Maybe we have to be creative and find ways of, now, you may not like it, but I just want to show you how these are different models that exist. And this is the type of conversation you can have around any of these halachot where the loopholes, right, have become ingrained. And it's the conversation you should have if what you care about is, as I started with from Ramosha, not just the obligation, but the opportunity that's inherited in mitzvot, right? That it's important to not just say, I have a loophole, and thereby exempt yourself from having a tough conversation, right? It might be that by the end, the answer is, the best we can do right now is use the loophole. It might be, I don't need the loophole. Or it might be, right, I'll use it when I need to, but I won't, right, be trigger happy on using the loophole. Or it might be I have to come up with something new, right? But again, if mitzvot are more than just obligations but opportunities, we owe it to the Torah, to God, to ourselves, right, to at least have the conversation to make sure we're in line with the spirit and not just the letter of the law. Okay? Shkoyach.